Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector in Chicago, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show or any of the Pet Talk radio shows I co-host with experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com and visit the podcast libraries. The Expert Vet is a production of Pet Media, Inc. and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content. The Radio Pet Lady Network is partnered with my other enterprise, the Dog Film Festival, which celebrates the remarkable bond between dogs and their people. I will be taking the festival across the United States, including Washington, D.C., East Hampton, New York, Rochester, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Phoenix. I hope to see you in New York City at the second annual Dog Film Festival on October 15th. You can find more information at dogfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Halo, holistic natural dog and cat foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. Their new grain-free recipes, like Vigor, give you more healthy choices for your pet's dinner, while Daily Greens bring vitamins and digestive enzymes into your dog's diet. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by giving donations to shelters through freekibble.com for pets awaiting a forever home. Dr. Donna is a new mommy. Congratulations on Miss Gabby, your new baby.
Thank you. I have definitely had a child without the hormones.
And no weight gain. No weight gain for you.
And everyone's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I have a new puppy. That's all. Just a puppy.
Yeah, it does sort of keep you up at night, and it's definitely challenges in ways you haven't had. Your bestie Morgan was an old boy when he left this world, so it's been a long time since you had a puppy.
Since I've trained a puppy, and she is a pure joy and pleasure. I still love, like, they just go a million miles an hour and then collapse tired, just in sleep for an hour, and then they're back up doing the same thing. She's a very joyful dog. I love her to death.
How wonderful. And you have three human children who must be getting a heck of a kick out of her.
Yes. Interesting, though. We have a very interesting dynamic in the house. My daughter is very similar to myself, would you know, want to be right with her at all moments. And then I've got two boys that are not as thrilled. So it's a little challenge, but we're working on it.
Now, one of your sons was actually not a dog lover by nature. I mean, he sort of came out of the womb as like, you're a veterinarian? You never told me you were going to be a veterinarian.
Exactly. I have one of those, my oldest, and then my youngest. After little Morgan died, who he tolerated very, very well, he became very fearful of dogs for whatever unknown reason. You know, we have no idea if Morgan might have nipped at him or at some point, but he became quite fearful. And so we are working with him, you know, really a lot to overcome fear.
Well, I think it's actually, even though we're going to talk about Gabby and my Wanda, who are at the opposite ends of puppyhood, Wanda being just a also, I think that Gabby will be a large breed too, but yes, at the far end of puppyhood or the middle, a year old, and Gabby being just a wee girl, we're going to talk about spaying, delaying spaying, different kinds of spays you can do. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to talk for a minute about children's attitudes to dogs or cats, mm-hmm, and the fact that people assume that children just are going to adore dogs and cats,
yeah,
and
no,
certainly a veterinarian would expect that. So how often do you think that occurs? I mean, you're no child psychologist, but
no,
you're a mom.
I think it's incredibly common. I don't think it's uncommon at all that children exhibit fear around dogs. And it is exactly the same as it is for dogs. If a child at their impressionable years is not appropriately socialized to dogs or cats or any animal, they often will be left with some, unsure, you know, they're just unsure around them, and that can quickly escalate into fear. You know, a rambunctious puppy, grunk, 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 pops up to you and wants to play and play bite, and, you know, and all of a sudden you've got a fearful child. If they weren't at all familiar with dogs or dog behavior, you know, in their early formative years, you know, a lot of children will develop fears to pets.
But why would the son
or sons of a veterinarian not have had that right. good socialization.
So I think with my youngest child, we had Morgan, whom he was very tolerant of. But I do believe that Morgan, you know, he smelled like a Cheerio and yogurt most of the time. And so I think Morgan spent a lot of time around him sort of snuffling and licking and, you know, and he became used to that. But as soon as she passed on, it's almost like he became worried that every single dog he saw was going to lick him and try to get in his space.
Oh, I see.
And so he just pulled back and didn't want to see any dog because he didn't want them to lick him and, you know, and for him, I think space away from a dog was not a great thing because we gave him about a year, him and me, a year to say, okay, we're ready for a new puppy. And, you know, and so there's been some growing pains, but he's definitely much, much better. And I think, not to say, you know, everyone has their own parenting style, but, you know, I don't need him to love dogs his whole life. I don't need him to be a dog lover, but I certainly don't want him to be fearful. And so we're taking it easy. He doesn't have to love her. He doesn't need to let her in his room and sleep with her and play with her. But when she approaches him, I don't want him to have fear. And so that's what we're working on.
Well, it's an interesting point because a parenting style should be to make a child as comfortable as possible in the world, but not force anything on them
right.
that just doesn't come naturally to them, right. including riding their bike really fast down a steep hill.
Right.
Some kids would never be scared of that.
Right.
Other kids are never going to be comfortable
no.
with speed, right, or something
right.
out of their control or whatever right. it may be to them.
Right. So it certainly hasn't been a lack of exposure. I think I'm dealing with different individual personalities and you know, my oldest son tends to be very analytical. He's very, you know, like a dog is just too unstructured for him. He just doesn't know what to expect from that dog, like computers, Lego sets, you know, he's pretty good. He's like, I know what to expect coming next, you know, with an unpredictable personality, i.e. any dog. You know, I think that's just out of his comfort zone.
That's really interesting. And I think it's really great for other moms and dads to hear you say that because every human, like every dog, really is genuinely an individual. And they're not going to fit into some prescribed idea of how it should be. So no one should feel that if they have a kid who's anti-dog or cat, that needs to be fixed or there's right. something wrong with
no.
their kid. It's
no.
really okay.
Right. And it's my job to train her appropriately to each of my children. And that's what we're working on. You know, I've taught Caleb is my oldest child. We're clicker training her so that she's, you know, really specifically trained. And so he loves it because that clicker in his hand, he's got control of that clicker and it suits his personality. And she's very responsive to it. He can make her sit. He can make her sit already. She's coming when called and clicked, walking already on leash without pulling. So, and that's all because of that clicker training. And, you know, at 10 weeks old, that's pretty impressive stuff.
I'm amazed. That's really a great idea.
So I only let him interact with her with the clicker. And because again, it provides him a comfort. She's very responsive. Now Lexi, you know, is like rolling around, you know, play biting with her and doing other things. And, you know,
right,
so everybody
right.
is doing their own, like, individual thing.
Really nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about delaying the spaying of Miss Gabby
yeah.
and Miss
yes.
Wanda. And I
yes.
selfishly want to bring up this idea of a spaying in which you leave the ovaries. This is a new idea to me, and knowing you, you know all about it. We'll be right back.
This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian in Colorado who has created many different low-dust litters for the health of all members of the family, cats or people with asthma and allergies. Precious Cat also makes litter for the special needs of many cats, from kitten-attract litter that helps youngsters develop good habits to cat-attract litter that helps those with out-of-litter box issues get back in the box. Precious Cat's Touch of the Outdoors litter provides environmental enrichment, bringing to indoor cats the natural scent of the outdoors from field grasses grown in their own fields. This show is also brought to you by Meow Space, a clear ventilated enclosure that can be a one cat feeding space, a litter box station, or even a safe place to nap, designed so that only one cat with a unique access device can enter the see-through box. Meow Space is made in the USA to solve out of litter box problems and individualized feeding needs in multi-cat households. Big enough for large cats to do their business or small dogs to eat their own food in peace, Meow Space benefits benefits the whole family because it also keeps dogs and small children out of the litter box, too. Go to meowspace.biz. That's meowspace.biz to see for yourself.
We are back. Dr. Donna, we have talked before about delaying spaying. Let's talk about it one more time because it's still a new idea to a lot of people and the medical reasons for it, developmental and medical reasons for it, are something that people may have heard, but they say about new ideas, you need to hear them three times before they sink in. So right. Let's go for it for time number two.
Right. So we've discussed it before. The new ideas, you know, we're challenging some of the old spay at 6 months, spay and neuter at 6 months for, you know, for population control and prevention of breast tumors and various things. And, you know, but some new larger studies, you know, many, many studies in veterinary medicine are based on 50 dogs, 100 dogs. But some newer studies in the last several years, looking at thousands of dogs in some lifelong studies, are pointing out the orthopedic, that there are some real potential orthopedic issues, cruciate ligament ruptures, you know, a variety of orthopedic issues like that, as well as an increased incidence of cancer, especially in spayed female dogs. And again, many of these were done in certain breeds, Rottweilers, Vizslas, Golden Retrievers. You know, there are so many factors that go into what causes a dog to develop cancer. You know, are these dogs also obese? Did they have diabetes? Are they, you know, it's such a many factor condition, but there is an apparent link in, you know, it's very suggestive that spaying dogs at the younger that they are spayed and they are lacking their estrogen, you know, that there is a higher incidence of cancer, of orthopedic disease. And so we're trying to be, as a profession, responsive to this. Obviously, bigger studies even yet need to be done in other breeds that have not as high of incidence of cancer, and, you know, controlled for other issues, controlled for other conditions that may be going on. So it's not perfect what's the data points that we have, but it is suggestive enough that I think this needs to start being a normal conversation, especially with large breed dogs. Large breed at-risk dogs, you know, our Goldens and Labs and you know, many, many dogs like this. I think we need to start having a conversation about spaying later, delaying spay, leaving animals intact if that's appropriate. So, you know, this is the conversation we're having, is because there are real medical data points now to suggest spaying at that early age is, you know, can be problematic.
Now, when you and I were growing up, which wasn't really that long ago,
no.
Dogs were not spayed and neutered. Privately owned dogs that people had, whether it was in an apartment or in the country or the suburbs.
Right.
Growing up, my dog, my Bedlington Terrier Pango, wasn't neutered. People didn't spay and neuter routinely or regularly.
Right.
And there weren't the population control issues that have happened as more people and whatever the reasons are in society, that there are areas, sometimes poor ones, sometimes not poor ones, where dogs are loosely owned and run free and copulate and have babies and nobody wants the babies and there's all these abandoned dogs.
Right.
So we have this whole arc of the shelter community that has gone from, in the old days, a dog catcher picked up dogs and it was a small town. They reunited them with their owners. And then there were too many dogs and they didn't have owners and there was no home for them and no money to keep them and they were just put to sleep. So the whole spay-neuter idea that all dogs should be spayed or neutered so they cannot reproduce has definitely reduced in many parts of the country, reduced puppies, you know, unwanted litters of puppies completely. And it has lower the number of dogs coming into shelters and being available for adoption at any age. And that seems great, but I think what we're talking about is the unintended consequences. In that same time period, call it 30 years, call it 40, pick a number, any number will do. The incidence of cancer in pet dogs has skyrocketed. Is it genetic in Golden? 60% will die of cancer? Sure, probably, but we know about anything genetic, there can be influence.
Right, there can be risk factors. And yes. So the estrogen presence or lack of is one risk factor. Being obese is a risk factor.
Right.
What you feed and the ingredients you're exposed to and other chemicals and things, these are risk factors to a predisposed population. So that's what, as a responsible profession and as responsible pet owners, you know, we're trying to minimize as many risks as possible. And you're right. I mean, spay and neuter, even at young ages, you know, there are some communities in some populations where it is still a necessary procedure. But we're, you know, in general talking about the people who are, you know, getting regular routine veterinary care, willfully going out, selecting puppies, adopting puppies, you know,
right.
Bringing them into their home. They're part of their families, you know, a different sort of pet population, if you will. So, I mean, it's not applicable for every population we have in this country.
Right. And those people like you, me, and probably people that listen to our shows,
yes.
Are under very responsible guidance and guardianship and stewardship of their dogs. Their dogs don't run free.
Correct.
And if they have a female, you can learn easily enough. I've learned it from Gail Watkins on Good Dogs, the training show, who breeds golden retrievers and has been aware of these studies for years and delays spaying and neutering her dogs and recommends it to her puppy buyers for quite some number of years. I'm learning how to, you know, deal with, oh, my God, she's in heat. And I must say we have
right.
a new sponsor on the Radio Pet Lady Network, a gentleman who's a dog trainer from the South, who has created the pet anti-breeding system, which is a harness that he
right.
has designed and developed so that if you do have a dog who's in heat, you can actually let her out in the yard or take her out on a walk. And if there were an intact male or even one who's neutered who was to mount her, he'd get nowhere. It's a chastity belt. So
right.
there are safeguards, and there's only actually a very short period of time, twice a year, that the female can be bred and can accidentally get pregnant. On the other hand, the issue of cruciate ligament tears, you had little Morgan. You don't see too many Jack Russells with cruciate ligament tears, but I have not had a full size, I call it full size, it's in that root, a large breed dog in the last 40 years that hasn't torn one and then the other of their ACLs.
Right.
And cancer is devastating. But let me tell you, the $5,000 to $10,000 surgery for an ACL tear and the 6 week to 6 month recuperation and the arthritis that follows
right,
is devastating.
That's the point, is those knees are never normal. They don't
nope.
ever return to full function.
Nope.
They're left with an arthritic knee. And I can't tell you how many older dogs that ultimately are euthanized because of quality of life. They can't stand up. They can't get around.
They're that was my Jazzy. Thank you.
And arthritic. And,
yep.
you know, so again, minimizing, are there things that we can do to minimize? But, you know, to go back to your point earlier, you know, 40, et cetera, years ago, you know, a dog didn't live very long if they were intact.
Right.
Because they
right.
were roaming the yards. They
yep.
were out doing whatever it is those
You're
intact
right.
males and females do. And, you know, and so their longevity was very, very short because of hit by cars and other
yes.
trauma and accidents, infectious diseases.
Right.
So there
right.
are some really very positive things about spaying and neutering dogs. But the fact is, again, we're talking about a much more controlled population of leashed pets
right.
in our bedrooms,
right.
you know, like in our homes. They're not running willy-nilly around the barnyard and around the neighborhood. So, you know, that's the kind of population, because intact dogs do have more of a tendency to, you know, assert themselves and roam around and want to do things and come into contact with more infectious disease if they're left intact. So it's just, again, I think the stressor is it's a conversation piece, especially like if you have an at-risk breed, if you end up with a golden retriever or with a Labrador or a Wiesler or a Rottweiler or some of these
boxer,
breeds.
Boxer, right.
Yeah, a boxer, exactly. Have the conversation piece with your vet. Like, when is a good time to spay? Should we spay? Should we leave intact? Are there other procedures? You know, what is our best choice?
And obviously, you don't wait till the horse gets out of the barn. Have the conversation
right.
when that dog is still intact. I mean, it's rare to be able to adopt a dog who's still intact,
right.
you know, past a couple of months or 6 months old. But it can happen. And my dog, Jazzy, who blew both of her ACLs within weeks of her adoption from the shelter where she'd been for 6 months, she was a mix. collie and some kind of a sled dog. Mm-hmm. So it isn't just the purebred dogs whose knees are at risk. And I just, if you haven't ever had to live through an ACL repair, tear, and rehabilitation, you don't know the misery for yourself and the dog. I mean, cancer is vile, obviously, but people should not underestimate the fact that letting a dog, especially a large breed dog, grow up fully, let their joints finish growing and their bones finish growing in the right proportion, it can be, in a way, as you said, life-saving. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I just heard about this ovary-sparing spay, and that's what I'm considering for Wanda. And also to ask you, so if you delay, how long do you delay? So we'll be right back.
The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test to determine which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. Spot Platinum can detect allergies for which they can make a USDA-approved oral spray custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon.
We are back. Dr. Donna, back in that long ago childhood I was referring to, people used to say about female dogs, and they did spay them a lot because they didn't want to deal with the nuisance of it all, well, let them have a litter or let them come into heat once or twice. Maybe there was some common folk wisdom about that people didn't even know the reason for. That was a belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of what we're saying.
Right.
Control and manage that girl or boy's environment so that they can go. Well, in a guy, there's no heat cycle, obviously. He's like always in heat.
Yeah,
but
right.
For the gals, let them have one or is it even two heat cycles?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one or two, but two heat cycles. And the reason for the timing of that is if she's going through a heat cycle, obviously she's maturing, she's producing estrogen from her ovaries, we're getting the secondary sex characteristics, we're getting the growth, there are things that are happening on the positive front there. But if you still spay a dog and remove the estrogen prior to, if she's cycled prior to that second heat, there is still some protective benefit of protection against mammary gland tumors or breast cancer. And this is the interesting part, is breast cancer in dogs is malignant, 30% of the time, 30 to 50%
right.
of the time. Okay, so many times it's benign anyways, 50%
right.
of the time.
Right.
And so, but again, that used to be the big thing, is like, okay,
right.
population control,
mm-hmm.
we want to get rid of, eliminate
right.
her risk of breast cancer. But instead, if we spay her too soon, we're potentially making her at risk for like malignant 100% of the time.
Yes.
Hemangiosarcomas, osteosarcomas, lymphoma, mast cell
Correct.
Tumors.
Correct.
So it's like the wisdom of that like shifts in my mind.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
okay, I'd rather deal with breast cancer every day of the week instead of
That's
hemangiosarcoma
right.
or lymphoma or something else. And so where the odds are a lot better.
Correct.
So again, that conventional wisdom, if you will, it's not holding as much water for
logic.
Right.
All right. So what is it? I went to my vet and I said, have you ever done a spay where you left the ovaries in? She said, no, but that'd be way easier. Just pop out the uterus and leave the uterus. I'm like, oh, great. I had no idea because, I've never actually been inside of a dog. So what is the value is that the dog keeps on getting that estrogen throughout her life.
Right. So what you're describing is truly a hysterectomy.
Right. Okay? It's not an ovo-hysterectomy.
Correct. It is a hysterectomy. And I will tell you, it is not something I recommend.
Ooh,
because,
tell me.
So leaving the ovaries, obviously, that's fine. But it is incredibly difficult to remove the entire uterus in a dog. You have to remove the entire cervix to remove the whole uterus, which can then lead you to some other issues when you have the cervix in a dog removed. And even if you try to remove the entire cervix, many, many, many times there is uterine tissue that remains. It is just one of those procedures, even the hands of board-certified surgeons, it's incredibly difficult to get the entire uterus. And it's the problem with that becomes your ovaries are still producing estrogen, they're still cycling, so that's great, but your uterus, that little tiny bit that's left, will end up with, over time, usually a uterine infection. That little stump becomes a problem. So to me, you know, if you're going to leave the ovaries in a dog, but you want to prevent pregnancy, your best procedure is a tubal ligation. And it's not because a hysterectomy with a cervix removal, there's going to be some potential complications from that, as well as you may not be getting it all. So what you're really trying to do is just prevent pregnancy. And you can get that with a tubal ligation and leave the uterus there, leave the ovaries there if that's what you're wanting. Prevent pregnancy with tubal ligation to let you know to prevent the pregnancy, but just doing a hysterectomy is not a good answer.
Well, then a typical spay in a female is to remove the uterus and the ovaries.
Correct.
Yes,
that is called an ovario hysterectomy, and that so they remove ovary and uterus. But I will tell you, the uterus they remove above the cervix, so they leave the cervix intact.
Why couldn't they do a hysterectomy and leave the cervix like they do in humans?
Because that will be under the influence of the estrogen still, and they will they develop into infections. I mean, it's just a problem.
Oh.
It's a different system.
So in other words, if you take all of the reproductive organs, the ovaries and the uterus, leaving the cervix there, now you have no risk of infection and no complications, and obviously you're not going to get pregnant.
Right.
So then you would want to delay a normal spay until, let's say, the second cycle.
Right. So then the other procedure that is done more commonly now than it used to be is called an ovariectomy. So many surgeons, instead of doing the whole ovary uterus removal, the ovariohysterectomy, they just take out the ovaries and leave the uterus. Because that's
but now we lost the estrogen
pyometria
later.
It's a less aggressive surgery than the whole ovarian hysterectomy. So when you get to the point where you're going to do, if you're going to spay your dog at, you know, age two or whatever you're going to do, you can even just do the ovariectomy. It's less aggressive. There's less surgery that the dog is undergoing just to remove the ovaries. They're better exposed. There's so many different ways to
interesting. In fact, what my vet said that she had done that. But then, why would you want to leave the uterus if one of the risks once a bitch gets to be five or six or is uterine infection?
Because without the ovaries, it doesn't happen.
You
have to have ovaries there. So the ovaries are the active organ.
Interesting. So they're active in a good way and in possibly a deleterious way.
So if you have a uterus but no ovaries, your uterus is just a remnant organ. It's not going to do anything.
Got it.
It doesn't become infected. It doesn't,
And by leaving it there, you don't open up a whole can of worms, so to speak, way down where the cervix might be, and then you have, questions. Right. Well, in wrapping up, I'm going to say, okay, you've answered my question. I'm going to wait for her second heat. It'll probably be sometime when she's a year and a half. And then I'll do either a total or just take out the ovaries. What about for you and Miss Gabby? You have a long time to wait. Are you going to keep looking at the literature and studying
it? Oh, yeah, for sure. I'll see. But, she is a golden doodle. So she's a gold.
Right.
She's a golden doodle Labrador cross. So, I mean, I've got some big breeds in there as well as high at-risk for cancer.
Right.
And so I'm for sure not going to be thinking about spaying her or any other procedure before the 18 to 24 months. And I'll see what her heat cycles are like. You know, I do have a home full of, you know, individuals who like a heat cycle might be just not acceptable.
But can I just say, I thought it was going to be gross and a mess, and I got these really cute, of course, being me, pink underpants for her to wear that you could put a little feminine thing in. And as Gail Watson told me, she just licked herself. I never saw a thing. I wasn't even sure she was in heat at 11 months.
Right.
I mean, it really was like, did anything happen?
And similar to individual human hygiene, dogs can vary on how cleanly they are or not.
I see.
So I'm going to see what happens. And because obviously I understand the what things to watch for in an intact female dog. If I opt to leave her intact with her uterus, with her ovaries, you know, I for me, understand what a uterine infection looks like, a pyometra, other things. So, you know, I am going to play it a little bit by ear. I'm going to keep my eyes on these, on the research. I'm going to see what she acts like when she starts to cycle. But
right.
I'm kind of aiming at the 2-year mark, you know, for
okay,
probably
well,
a very reasonable, you know, ovariectomy or
excellent.
Ovary hysterectomy, just depending on, you know, how things are going for her.
All right. Well, I've got another at least 6 to 12 months to make my decision. But thank you for this. And I hope that this conversation helps many of you stop and think, consider. You can always write to me at radiopetlady@gmail.com if there's any part of this you didn't understand or you want some more clarification, because we can always come back to it in another show. Thanks, Dr. Donna.
Take care.